History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take a little initiative and ask a few questions, and then be patient enough to listen as memories from long ago take on new life in the here and now. The idea, first and foremost, is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. It's hard to believe that 4th of July weekend is here already. This Independence Day marks birthday number 246 for America. We live in challenging times, there's no doubt, but there have been plenty of challenging periods through those 246 years, and there is still so much for us to be thankful for. There are also many different ways to celebrate the holiday, and I'm sure you have many choices wherever you're listening from today. While many museums close for the holiday, there's an aircraft carrier in California's Bay Area that's an exception to that rule. The USS Hornet Sea, Air, and Space Museum in Alameda, California will be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on the 4th. There's plenty of free parking. They'll have a DJ that day, some special food and drink for the occasion, and so much history to explore aboard that historic ship. I have a link to the details online for you at hometownheroesradio.com. The success of Top Gun Maverick in theaters has a lot of people coming to the Hornet to see an F-14 and to see the ship where much of the original Top Gun was filmed. And there's a lot more I learned about this historic vessel in a serendipitous tour, some of which connects to some of your favorite hometown heroes you've met on this program over the years. Let's learn a little more from one of the Hornet's many volunteers, Cynthia Savoy. How long have you been volunteering here on the Hornet?
9 years.
What was it that hooked you in? Why do you do this?
For the love of the ship, the love of the military, and the history of the Hornet.
Give me a taste of that history of the Hornet. Why should people come see this piece of living history?
We are the most decorated ship in Navy history for World War II. We shot down more planes, sunk more ships than any other vessel. We also are the historic site for the Apollo 11, first men to walk on the moon. This ship actually recovered the astronauts when they came back from the moon.
And you're wearing a NASA hat right now. I'm thinking that's something you've always been interested in, the space race and NASA and getting to the moon and other places?
Correct. I've always watched every shuttle take off on the NASA channel, if it was usually taped or I could see it live. But as a kid, I used to go to the planetarium in New York by myself and just admire the space program and the evolving of it.
And is there a military connection in your family that maybe inspired some of this? Or what was it that really said, hey, Cindy, you need to go do this?
Well, my father was in World War II in the South Pacific. And also, I grew up near the Brooklyn Navy Yard, where I could see ships being built and I could go visit because a lot of my family worked there as a kid.
And did your father ever tell you much about what he did in World War II?
Only the recreation part, playing soccer and things like that. But he never referred to what he actually witnessed as a soldier.
Which is very common. But now you know the history of this ship in World War II and beyond. You just gave us a little bit of the track record in terms of the decorations. But if people are to come here to Alameda and come aboard the Hornet, what are they going to see? What should they be looking for?
Well, as soon as you come on, you're going to see something called the hangar deck. The hangar deck actually has historic airplanes and helicopters on the hangar deck. We have a replica of the bomber that George H. Bush was shot down in World War II and was actually recovered. That's how he became president. He was very famous. Also, we have the Wildcat, which is an excellent plane that was in the bottom of Lake Michigan for many years because they used it for practicing takeoff and takeoff and touchdown in Lake Michigan. And we were able to get one of the last ones from salvage, and we restored it here on the ship. We also have the helicopter that picked up the astronauts, 11, and that's called a Sea King. So you have to come and see all these wonderful planes and helicopters that we have here stored and have been restored by our great restoration crew.
Had you ever been on an aircraft carrier before you started volunteering here?
No.
What was the most surprising thing to you that maybe you didn't expect to learn about what it's really like aboard an aircraft carrier?
Wow. There's a lot of... Actually, it's everything. As soon as I came on, I was amazed at this, at how large it was, what it had to offer history-wise, and also the volunteers that are here. They are definitely dedicated to the ship. Restoration, the docents, security, everyone on this ship is dedicated, and we love volunteering to give our time and give everyone the history of the ship and what it was like to be a sailor on the ship, either a ranked officer or enlisted men. You will come and see where the enlisted men ate and slept and where the officers ate and slept.
And right now, I mean, we're standing right next to the captain's chair where he would have been in the South Pacific or anywhere around the world during the Hornet service years. We can see the flight deck. We can even see the catapult tracks still there that launched so many planes off this historic deck. For people that want to get involved, what's your advice to them? What are the different ways they can get involved to maybe explore more of the Hornet and partner with you and your fellow volunteers in what you're doing?
The best way is to go to our website. And that will give you all the information to volunteer and donations, and also special events. New Year's, we have one of the largest New Year's Eve parties in the Bay Area, and also our Monster Bash Halloween, one of the largest Halloween parties in the Bay Area.
And when people think the East Bay, when they think Alameda, when they think USS Hornet, it's Navy, 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 Navy. But there is some other history aboard this ship that you were kind enough to show me, and we had some mutual friends that are a part of that exhibit. You have a Nisei Veterans exhibit here on the ship. Tell me about that. Why is that important, and what do you hope people see and grasp and glean when they have a chance to visit that?
Well, the Nisei exhibit is dedicated to our veterans, Japanese Americans, second generation Japanese Americans that fought for our country while their families were in internment camps following Pearl Harbor. It has so much rich history, and the exhibit is very, very good. Our docents have taken a lot of time to put it together, and you'll learn about the process that the veterans went through while their families were in internment camps and they were fighting in the European theater for our country. And we also see how many decorations they have, Purple Hearts, Medals of Honor. It's a great place to visit. Also about the military intelligence service, who were important in breaking the code in the South Pacific and China during World War II. Very important in winning the war.
And each room, it's part of that Nisei exhibit, is dedicated to a different American veteran of Japanese ancestry. And one of those is the Lawson Sakai room. And Lawson told his story on this program. Some of our listeners remember that. Sounds like you got to know him quite well. What was it about Lawson and his story that made such a powerful impression on you?
Lawson was generous with giving me information personally about his experience in the 442. He was just dedicated in processing and giving information and teaching the history of the 442, what it was like firsthand to fight for our country. And he has four Purple Hearts, and also he had the biggest heart there is. You have to come and visit and read about him and what he did and what all of his fellow veterans did for the 442. It has four rooms dedicated to different historic information from the second that they were boot camp till the end of World War II. So come visit.
Yeah, and there are different aspects of those displays. There's a couple different videos they can watch that have interviews with Japanese American veterans. And I'm curious for you, you know, just because I know you knew Lawson so well, was there a particular element of his story and hearing him tell it that just really grabbed you, that said, boy, I can't imagine being in his shoes when that was happening?
Yeah, there are two. One is the Lost Battalion saving the 141 Texas National Guard. That was very historic as far as their accomplishments in saving this group of Americans from the Germans. And also the liberation of Bruges, France, where they were instrumental in saving that town. Every 4 years, they celebrate their liberation by their military armament coming out with jeeps and tanks and other vehicles, and they would have the American flag on one side and the French flag on the other side. And Lawson was the MC for many years, and he tells you so many good things about what the 442 accomplished in the European theater.
And Why, in your mind, I mean, you know it as well as anybody because you spent so much time in there and you've met so many of these gentlemen. Why, in your mind, is it so important to preserve that kind of history?
So it doesn't happen again.
The Japanese internment, or to put it maybe a little more completely, the forced removal and incarceration of roughly 120,000 Americans of Japanese ancestry is something we definitely don't want to see happen again to any group of people. I never expected to find such an extensive display of that history here on an aircraft carrier, but I'm sure glad I did, thanks to Cindy. And we're going to dive into some of the stories of the men honored here in a moment, but one more question for you first. How long are you going to keep doing this?
I mean, you even dragged your husband Leroy into it. How long are you guys going to be out here?
Until we can't. So we plan on being here for many years.
Well, maybe you'll catch Leroy and Cindy on the 4th of July when the Hornet is open from 10 to 5, or next weekend, July 9th, when the museum holds a live aboard overnight adventure. On July 23rd, Pearl Harbor survivor Mickey Gannich, one of our all-time favorites here on Hometown Heroes, will be memorialized on the carrier. And that night, on Saturday the 23rd, the Hornet hosts an Apollo 11 splashdown and space exploration event. You can find info on all of those at uss-hornet.org. And I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. But for the rest of today's program, I want to explore some of that history I was surprised to find captured so extensively and so well aboard the Hornet there in Alameda, the Nisei Veterans Exhibit. The first of four rooms you'll enter there captures what happened in the wake of the attack on Pearl Harbor. And here's a firsthand account from one of the Hornet's favorite Nisei vets, Lawson Sakai.
We were actually 7 miles from downtown Los Angeles City Hall. I walked it one time. And there was a lot of open land between where we were and downtown L.A., not like it is today. But we had 5 acres, which, you know, it was a small greenhouse-type flower industry. But it was in a nice location and easy to get to market. So we also farmed 13 acres quite a ways away. Out in the country, and we called it Blue Hills in those days. Currently, it's a country club near La Habra. All that farmland, there were no roads, just dirt roads that we drove on, and there were maybe 7 or 8 Japanese families farming chunks of land, various things, and we were also farming there. So my summers were spent on the farm. Growing up through the Depression years, of course, everybody had to do something because, you know, it was tough going in the late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, what do you remember about those times? And what about your family? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had one older sister. We really were a very small family. Most of the families, Japanese families, had 5, 6, 7, 8 children. They have big families, and their farm a little bigger. But in our case, we're very small, and I think it was sufficient. I used to help my father whatever I could. I was going to school, so I couldn't help him very much. But the whole Japanese community, and they used to get together for their own parties, but they couldn't associate with anybody else. Number one, they didn't speak the language. And number two, the other people didn't want the Japanese to mingle with them. But they were becoming the best and biggest farmers, best and biggest flower growers, the best and biggest fishermen. They had a huge fishing fleet at Terminal Island. My uncle was driving a Chrysler Airflow around, which was the car in, you know, 1938-9.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of business jealousies and so forth, and a lot of pressure on the politicians to remove the Japanese, which was the talk, was send them to Japan, you know, after Pearl Harbor, you know, ship them all to Japan, whether they're American citizens or not. That, you know, so then they possibly could have if they wanted to, I'm sure. You know, they put 120,000 into camps.
Yeah.
It wouldn't take much more to start putting them on ships and sending them out. So that was kind of the rumor going around. But
even before Pearl Harbor, I'm interested in your experience, because clearly that was a differentiating point. But I understand you were a pretty good athlete. You played high school football and basketball, even some in junior college?
It was war years. I weighed 140 pounds.
Yeah.
I played a running guard at Compton Junior College. I graduated high school in 1941. Mm-hmm. So in September, I went to Compton Junior College, and the ranks were depleted, let's say. So I got to play second string football. Mm-hmm. And I also played baseball later before I left California. But
had you ever faced any kind of discrimination in school, being Japanese American?
Very little. Nothing really to speak of, because the teachers were good. Almost all of my friends, the students, were all good. When I went, of course, I knew almost everybody at Montebello High School. When I went to Compton, I knew maybe one other person, maybe two. I didn't know anybody else. They're all strangers, but we all got along fine. Mm-hmm. Really had a good time there. The coach, Ed Suggett, used to kid me a lot. He said, when Japan attacks California, he says, are you going to attack me?
But I imagine that December 7th really changed your life. That's probably a pretty memorable day.
It didn't affect me as a student. The other students didn't say, what the hell's going on or anything. They, you know, it just, I don't think it affected them as students, and they never passed it on to me. I got along fine before and after Pearl Harbor. The only thing, of course, the newspapers, radio, and so forth, was really gearing up for getting worse and worse every day.
And that day, specifically for you, December 7th, 1941, I like to ask every veteran this, Japanese American or otherwise, because they all seem to remember something. And do you remember that moment when you found out?
It was Sunday morning. I was doing homework. And I was listening to my radio when the announcer broke in and said Pearl Harbor had been attacked. I didn't pay much attention to it because I really didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. Then as the news report kept coming on, it was like they would break in every 15 minutes or so and give you more information. Then, you know, it described how the battleships were being sunk and so forth. It was a pretty big deal. And then I realized how serious it really was. So it was kind of tough talking to my parents. They were working when they came in for lunch. You know, it was kind of, I broke the news to them and they were pretty shocked. They knew it was going to happen. And everything was pointing toward some kind of a confrontation. So I don't think they were surprised, but they were pretty disappointed that it did happen, because then now it's what's going to happen to us. You know, that was the thing. And then, of course, that afternoon, the FBI shows up and, you know, they take my uncle away. So,
and I want everyone to hear that, because I don't think people realize, especially people that weren't alive, this is really hard for them to fathom. The very day that Pearl Harbor happens, the FBI shows up and takes your uncle.
They took a lot of people on December 7th. They knew where everybody was.
And why do you feel that your uncle was targeted, that he was snatched
up? He was the leader of the United Farmers Association, UFA, the largest produce market, 9th Street Market in L.A., a big wheeler dealer. So, you know, when they take the head, that leaves the rest of the body lifeless. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were doing. They were picking up whoever, teachers, lawyers, doctors, businessmen, anybody that they considered a leader of the community, they hauled them away. And that usually left people underneath who really were kind of helpless, and families. In most cases, the men in those days did everything. Mm-hmm. The mothers just raised the family and helpless. Mm-hmm. This is what happened. All this kind of crippled the Japanese families. So it made it easy for the U.S. government to take the next step, which was putting everybody into the American concentration camps mm-hmm. that were being built. at the same time.
It's time for our first break, but when we come back, multiple perspectives on the most legendary achievement of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the rescue of the Lost Battalion, which is captured extensively in the Nisei Veterans exhibit aboard the USS Hornet Museum in Alameda, California. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.